Very good, and welcome to the Fed Report Technical Market Call for July 23rd, 2015. Amazing to think that summer is almost over. We certainly haven't had a summer rally in the stock market. Let's go through a couple things. First of all, there has been no big advance after the Greek news. The market started off well, but basically has stalled out. Really, right where we have been since March. We're you know, if you look at the closes in March of this year, we were right around 211.63 at the end of February. We are at 211.32 now here in July. What are we looking at and looking for? And I guess the first thing I would say is we're watching the internal indicators. We've been looking for that breadth surge. We have not had it on the McClellan oscillator, which is usually the early warning system. We would note that last week we saw some improvement in the new highs, new lows numbers, and last week was an up week. But the totals were still negative on the week last week. We had more new lows than new highs. And so that's a little bit of a bad sign. We want to see this week's numbers. Those sorts of numbers on the new highs, new lows have a tendency to move ahead of the market, i.e., you will see worse numbers for a while when the market is flat, or better numbers for a while when the market is flat, and then the market will move in that direction. Of course, one of the issues there is, you know, how much time you need. It is a condition indicator, not a timing tool. We also know we did a piece where we showed some of the unweighted indexes, and we think it's worthwhile to compare SPY to RSP and QQQ to QQEW. And when you do that, obviously, you notice that there is definitely a crowding effect in the market, where the money's going into big cap stocks now. This is, again, these are all concerns, not necessarily things that say we're going to get a severe correction, but these are the sorts of things you see in front of a correction. So we want to be just a little bit careful of that. Now, I'm going to talk about two stocks here that are of interest, especially because I inadvertently talked about one of them when I shouldn't have, which is Apple. Apple is actually trading reasonably well here. We, for those of you who remember us talking about being short Apple at 130, our target was 120. The stock rallied back from 120. It's already hit that. Got to 132 and then fell yesterday dramatically on bad earnings, which we think is what the market's been saying about the stock. But notice that yesterday's low was actually higher than 120. So in other words, the stock on this is actually making higher lows. We talked to a couple of people who like the stock for the dividend. It's no longer really a huge growth play in that view. We have no reason not to buy Apple for the dividend at this time. We do not think the stock is going to break. If the market gets really bad and Apple breaks, there's a gap in the 114 area that could fill. But the overall chart of Apple is quite positive. The other stock we've been asked about, and it relates to China, and we'll talk about China a little bit, is BABA, BABA, which is a downtrend, but which has given some bottoming signs. And we could see BABA trading back up to 88 to 90. The real kicker is the highs of May at 95 need to be exceeded to turn this trend up. If those highs are not exceeded, the trend on this is still down, but we can get awfully close to those highs. And we are seeing a weekly stochastic that's starting to turn up, and a couple of other relatively nice things about this that suggest that we could see an advance at least to 90 to 92. So if you're in BABA, we would hold BABA. And we will talk about China a little bit in the international markets when we talk about that on the call. But first I want to talk about bonds. We've seen a nice little rally in bonds. Several of you have remarked on the fact that we actually switched out of DSUM and into PGX in our bond model. The reason for that is you're now starting to see rates be stable in this 115 to 120 area, which is for support, and at the same time, you're seeing the weekly stochastic on TLT turn up. We have been saying for a while that in this slowly rising rate environment, what you're going to need is a cocktail of bond type instruments, of fixed income instruments, rather than just one thing that's going to produce income. Part of that cocktail approach is going to be trading things like the weekly stochastic, using that as a tool to actually enter the market, create some income, get some dividends, write some calls, and then ultimately sell it when that weekly stochastic gets overbought. If you look at DSUM, the weekly stochastic on that turned down a bit ago, and that could come down. You know, admittedly, 2375 is in a huge distance here, but that still could be buyable at 2375 to 2350 in 5, 6, 7 weeks. So, you know, we are going to start to trade that as a cocktail. At the same time, PGX, which has a great yield, has a very positive weekly stochastic, and if it can go up for a bit and we can collect some dividends and then sell that and move into DSUM, in other words, the time may have come to start to move around in these instruments a little bit and take a little bit more active and tactical approach to creating income, and that's what I think we're going to have to do, you know, if these rates do in fact start to creep up over the next couple of years, which we think is going to happen. And don't forget, by the way, we can write calls on some of these fixed income investments for income. TLT has got great options. There's some other ones that do. You guys are probably aware of those. But do not overlook treating these fixed income things like a stock, writing calls, getting called away, doing all the sorts of things that we do to create incremental percent returns for clients in stocks can now start to happen in these bond ETFs. And that may be the way to do this. Let's talk for a minute about the commodities. We still think there's a good chance that oil is in a bottoming area. But it's weak enough, and the other thing about that is just because it's in a bottoming area does not mean that it has to go up. That's a concern. It may just sort of base down here. Let's say USO bases between 16 and 21.22 for a while. Okay, there's tradable stuff going on there. We can take advantage of that. But it's going to be bad for oil stocks. It's going to be bad for MLPs. We had a talk with a friend of ours from college who I may try to get on one of these calls. He's actually an attorney in Houston that's written a bunch of these MLP contracts. There is contract risk that these contracts are going to be renegotiated down. And if that's the case, the MLPs, in fact, are correlated to the price of oil. There is a piece by Rich Bernstein out several months ago on how this could affect oil and why MLPs could be correlated to oil. You know, there's so many people that have said that oil prices do not affect MLPs, yet they seem to be affecting MLPs. And so when that happens as a technician, I start to look around for reasons for why that could be occurring. That's the best reason I can come up with. I'm more than open to hearing other reasons. But if you look at MLPI and you look at oil, there is no doubt that there is a correlation. And realize one thing that sort of fits into this, in my opinion, and that is if the price of oil is in fact going to just sit here for a while and not do much, this will still hurt the MLPs because the price is not going back up to where it was when the original contracts were signed. So that may be the answer. I'm trying to find out more about it. I would love any sources that any of you guys get. I would say, and I've got some people at Merrill Lynch and at UBS talking to the analysts about this. But that could be what's going on here and why these things are still going down. Let's talk about Europe for a second, and then we'll talk about China. We still really like EWL. It's trading extremely well. And for investors, that is a great long-term chart. Those of you who were lucky enough to get it down near 32, 33, we're very happy with that purchase. Notice that the weekly stochastic on EWL came down into the 30s and has turned up. This could put on another surge as things stabilize in Europe. Our most speculative idea did get creamed for a bit, but has come back nicely. That is EWI, and that is trading well. Anyone who wants to play turmoil in Europe and Greece probably should be playing EWI, which is trading well, rather than GREK, which is not. And so we like those markets. Now let's talk a little bit about China. China has basically fulfilled all of our rally projections that we had off the lows, but that doesn't mean that it's going to go down right away. In fact, we've got weekly stochastics that are turning up on GXC. You may see this market sort of trade up and down and sideways for a little bit. The issue here is, will we have a retest in 5 to 10 weeks? The technical indicators say yes, that's very, very likely. So we would not necessarily be investing in China here. We would be a lot more interested in simply sitting with China and looking to buy a retest and a new closing low on this thing before we see China being out of the woods. There's so many nicer looking things out there to buy. And as I say, we've had a couple of clients call in and say they got 10% moves on their ETFs, buying them near the lows that we had been talking about in our midweek review. And for those people that have the 10% in a few weeks, especially in a market that's this difficult, I would just go ahead and take that off and declare victory. I can't see any other way to play that. Let's take a quick look at emerging markets, and then we will open the call to some questions. EEM is still holding the lows in the 36-37 area. It's still got its weekly stochastics that are positive. Everyone should know we have traded the range from 40 to 45, tried to trade that 40 to 44, 43 a couple of times. We've suggested people get back in at 40. Currently, they're at a little bit of a loss position. We would stay with that as the weekly stochastic had just turned up, but we would use a stop loss below 36 on EEM. Notice that we use other ETFs for that. PIE is one that is trading better. PXH is another one that is trading a little bit worse. The whole point here is, whatever you're looking at or using as a vehicle, make sure that you watch EEM, because that's what everybody in the market is watching, and you might see some real weakness in that area if EEM starts to break below 36. With that, let's get the call to Jeff Garbaz for some questions, and we will answer those questions and then take yours. So, Jeff?
Hey, Fred. How are you?
I'm fine, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Good. Let's start off with talking about the Russell. Since last Thursday's really strong day, the Russell has really struggled against the major indexes. Is that a concern?
Yeah, it is, Jeff. It looks a lot more, again, like the like some of the unweighted indexes that we've been talking about over time. In other words, when you look at the daily chart of this, when you look at the daily chart of NYA, all of these things are failing to make higher highs or even go back to the old highs, while the indexes that are really big cap-weighted indexes like the S&P, in fact, are going back to the highs. That's something that can improve without the market going down a whole lot, but at the same time, it's what you see before the market has a correction. So we're sort of at war here. But, yeah, smaller mid-caps, the interesting thing to me, MDY, which we had liked and which has had better accumulation models, is also struggling. And the accumulation models have weakened but are still a little bit better. But, again, that's just a sign that this market continues to narrow and narrow and narrow.
Okay. So let's talk gold. 10 down days in a row. The worst number of down days in a row since 1996. Are we at the nadir now on this thing, or are we going to go over the cliff?
Well, put it this way: if we're not at the nadir, everybody in the gold market's going to start ralphing. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Good one, Fred. That was good.
I'm sorry. I had to say that. Jeff, I think we're very close, but realize there is a rumor in the gold pits and with the gold traders that there is a very big seller of gold that's not going to roll into the August contract. Or out of the August contract and by December. And we talked about that a little bit last week. And I'll just mention again, each commodity market has different rules, but the real problem you have with the July contract is that when August comes around, people holding the contracts can be assigned physical gold. In other words, they'll have to take delivery. Most of the gold speculators that we know don't want to take physical delivery of the gold. They want to trade the contracts. So those people are going to sell out in advance of August 1st. And in addition, if you're using August as a hedge and you're selling your physicals and you're not going to hedge by doing December's, what the net result is, that means August is going to get, the August contract is going to get down into August, right? We've got a week left on this, okay, before we get to the first couple of trading days of August. Okay, where this market goes to spot. And I think we can see possibly a little bit lower. We've been looking at GLD possibly going down and testing the long-term support at 100. Admittedly, that's only $5 away here, but it still means that we could see 100, and more importantly, we could see continued pressure or at least some basing in this market through next week, which is the last trading week of July before we get to August. So what I would say is, if you're interested in gold, and I am interested in gold, because the long-term indicators are oversold, I would be sure that if I were to pick some up in here, that I had money left to buy it in the first and second week of August, okay? Because you want to get through this contract period. The other thing we mentioned in the midweek, I think last week, but one of the questions we want to answer is a number of people who have wanted to take a tax loss in GLD, but still be in gold, asked about a 31-day rollover, and that may not work, but we have a strategy for you if you need that, and that is you can sell GLD and buy IAU, which is another gold ETF. The only difference is this is 10% of GLD. So you've got this trading at 1060 with GLD basically trading at 105.10, which is 1051. So in other words, they're very, very close, very, very close. So if you want to take the loss in gold and yet be ready to buy gold, you can do that swap, take your tax loss, and see a run up. If this works. So that's what we would do. That's what we would look at recommending. We will talk about that over the course of next week because there may be a real opportunity in there.
Okay, so yesterday, if we go look at just like candlesticks, it kind of had it was a white candle that had pretty much an equal wick at the top and equal wick at the bottom. So it's considered like a long white candle. And if you look back historically through time in gold, you find a lot of that kind of near bottoms. Do you put any weight into that at all?
Yes, as being a potential bottom? Yeah, there's very definite bottoming signs here. And, you know, I myself as a gold trader would probably buy some gold in here. But, I know that even if we buy it here, you're probably not going to see a huge rally in it before the end of the August contract. You may see some basing, or you may see a rally up and then some selling. I don't know, or it may just rally. I don't mind owning gold here as a buyer, but I'm just saying, Jeff, the traders out there, the guys are waiting for the other shoe to drop on the sale. I mean, and they're talking a big sale. They're talking about like Russia selling, a bunch of its gold, or China selling. I mean, a really big sale, not some guy. Okay, so they're not going to step in front of that until there's a better feeling that seller is out of the market.
Okay, fair comment. Let's talk a little bit about this breath thing. This breath thing appears to be, as you said, it can go on for a long, 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 long time. And it seems like if we look at basically energy and materials and commodity-related stuff, basically the goods that are being used as inputs, to produce a final good, that's where the real breath problems are. And should we be really concerned about that? Or again, are we at like just an absolute low where it's just darkest before the dawn?
Jeff, Paul Desmond at Lowry's Reports, which is an institutional service and a good one, did an article back in 2001, 2002 on how markets top, and he basically said that compared the markets to a feather, with the pieces of the feather falling off, the tufts of the feather falling off gradually. What we're seeing is, a few years ago, every sector was doing well. It's just a question of how well it was doing. Now you're seeing XLI, XLB, XLE, XLP to an extent. You're seeing a bunch of these sectors that are not really doing that well. In other words, instead of running on 10 cylinders, we're now running on 5 or 6. Okay? The only thing I can think of to say about that is, from the standpoint of what do we actually do if client money is coming in, is, first of all, now more than ever, it's important to be in the right sectors. Okay, we consider those right sectors to be XLF, as that could really do well over time, and it's starting to break out. Much above 26, like we did in our analysis, would be huge, and target 32. XLY is trading extremely well. XLV, healthcare, is still trading okay. In other words, you have to be in the strongest stuff right now. And you have to watch things like technology, like IYW, if you look at it, chart-wise, was doing much better until the Apple earnings came out. But if you look at equally weighted tech, of course, it's not. What that means is, again, sometimes there is narrowing within the sector. So what I think that means, Jeff, is, it's a concern for the market, but not necessarily the death knell for the market. We have to see broader participation, and that's probably going to come from some of the sectors that are down right now, not that are up. But at the same time, if we're trying to position client assets so they can do well, you want to sort of get into the best stuff. Now, admittedly, it's sort of like a great way to put it is, this is the deck of the Titanic that we're on, and the deck is starting to slope downwards, and the ship is starting to sink, okay? What you're seeing is the people on the boat are running to try to get to the highest end of the deck before it goes underwater too, okay? And we have to be amongst those people. The money is going to flow into those areas, and we have to play them. At the same time, the ship can right itself. We have plenty of time to buy the weaker areas if the ship starts to right itself. If this ship starts to right itself, Jeff, it's going to be much more than a 1 or 2 month move. It's probably going to be the trend over the next year. So, you don't have to buy the bottom here. That's what we were talking about with the McClellan, and when it was down at minus 150, saying, you know, why wait until it gets to plus 200? Why not just buy it now? Well, yeah, you can do that, but you don't have confirmation it's going to do well. And when we've seen those big surges coming off bottoms, they've lasted for months and months. So we're sort of looking at it that way more than the other way and trying to position clients in the very best-looking sectors. I hope that answered the question.
That does. So it kind of bodes the question then, when we have the bad days and we sell off for 4 or 5 days, with what you're saying for the second half of the year, more than likely until we get confirmation that we're not going to do that, you would be a nibbler. You would be a buy-the-dip guy. Like, I heard someone say it really brilliantly the other week. They basically said, like, the only people that have really done well this year have been the traders that have been buying the dips and selling the rips. And so from the strategy that we've laid out, that's what we want to be doing, correct? We want to be, adding to people's holdings as we get these sell-offs and we approach like lows, correct?
Yes, and adding in the strongest sectors.
Yeah. It's very bifurcated, as you pointed out in the sector review, in terms of what's working and what isn't working. Last question for you is, oil just broke $50 again. And it looks like, you talk a lot about the summer driving season. I also heard someone say basically once we get beyond the driving season, there are no catalysts. And they're calling for 40, which means we're going sub $2 in a lot of places around the country for gasoline, which is going to be a big benefit to the consumer. And so just weigh in on consumer discretionary and XLY, just to reiterate from what you did in the sector stuff for this week for everyone to kind of hear.
Yeah, what we did in the sector review this week was we basically added XLY as an overweight and put XLE as an underweight, okay? The reason for that is as follows. We got a pretty good, and thanks to people like George who complimented me on our play in oil back in March for a great tactical rally. At the time we did that trade, we had the question, which was, were the technicals going to lead the fundamentals up? In other words, were the rally signs that we had and the rally that we played indicative of better fundamentals down the road, coming down the road, or was it just a technical rally? The way it looks now is it looks like it did not suggest that fundamentals were going to improve. And my hat's off to our client, Tim, who did the call for us on oil, who pointed that out to me early. Okay. The fact that oil is weak during the summer driving rally season is also a sign that the fundamentals are not getting better. So, we've got real concerns in oil because even if oil prices stay here and don't go down more, oil stocks can still go down. MLPs and such can still go down because we think that those were possibly anticipating higher oil prices. In other words, oil can base here, and if oil goes down, it could really affect those. Our weightings are reflective of underperformance and outperformance, not necessarily market direction. And if oil stays here, energy should underperform. And so we added that in that way. We also took utilities out of our underperforms, by the way, because it looked like we had signals that the bond rally was coming. And, if you see some bond rally, utilities may actually do a little bit better than energy, although they're still sort of an icky chart. We sort of made the choice to switch back to telecom as an underweight, which has also been trading a little bit worse. The real message here, though, is we have to buy stuff in the strongest sectors and not bottom fish, at least for now. And if you're looking to buy stuff in energy, I know a lot of portfolio models, you have to have it. You look at a stock like Schlumberger, which has actually done much better relative to the March lows, and you buy that rather than something like Southwest Energy, SWN, which has blown through the March lows and may actually, as an independent, go out of business. In other words, what we're going to say is if everything is on sale, you have to buy the best stuff. Okay? And with that, let's open the call to questions. Jeff and I went on a little longer than usual. So for questions, remember to hit star 6 and unmute your phones, and we'll take some questions. And sorry we went on so long.
Hey, Fred, it's Paul.
Paul, how are you?
I'm good. A quick question, more of a how-to kind of a question, but West Rock was formed through Mead and Rock 10's merger last week. And when you look at the new symbol, how do you interpret these types of names when there's no history on these charts?
WRK
is the symbol.
Yeah, the only thing I've been able to do is what I do when there's going to be a big merger like this, is I tend to go and look at the old charts, which I still have, and figure that the trend in those is going to continue for a while. But, yeah, that's a problem for technicians. It's more of a – at that point, I'm afraid you have to look at the fundamentals a little bit more.
Gotcha. And one specific name, Applied Materials, AMAT.
AMAT. The daily chart is lousy. The weekly chart, you're right on 17 to 18 area support. Looking at this week, Paul, especially after last week, which was a big down, if we start to materially exceed the lows of this week, this trading week, you're probably going to see 15 on this, and you want to get rid of this.
Well, this is a tightrope on our stop as it sits right now, so I just wanted to kind of just confirm that.
Yeah, this is like, I feel like that wonderful movie, you know, on Owl Creek Bridge when you're standing there with the noose around your neck, but they haven't really popped the little door and you're having your dreams, right? This is very close. And again, this is indicative of what's happening with technology. We saw a big surge in Google and 10 other stocks get down and make new lows. So, that's the problem with tech, and that's why we're not recommending tech. It's so selective.
Great, thank you.
Sure. Other questions? Got to have at least one more. I know we do out there. Although it is the dog days of summer here. Going once, going twice. Very good. Then we'll end the call a little bit
earlier. Can I throw one more out at you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Whirlpool, WHR.
WHR. You've got a nice-looking outside week to the upside right off of 160 support, and this is a big-cap name with a stochastic that's gone positive. I could very definitely buy this here and very happily and look for 200 to 210. And, Paul, you know, if you look at some of the leading stocks that are doing really, really well, like Starbucks or Disney, right, these are all discretionary-type names, right?
Right.
That's where the money's going, and I always think, especially when the market's narrow like this, of John Dillinger and what he said, which you remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we got to go where the money is, folks, and not into old names. And
this one got bailed out by the housing data this week, so...
Yeah. And the housing data isn't bad. You know, I don't want to be funny here, but, you know, one of the reasons that the market has been up so strongly the last couple of years is it's been anticipating good news, you know, discounting that good news, and now the market's getting it, and what's happening is we're digesting it, right? That's what the sideways motion movement probably means, and when it's through digesting it, we'll probably get another up move. That would be relatively normal. Okay, until we start to see that broaden out, we're not going to jump all over it. But, you know, you're going to get good news here, and I think, you know, stocks like housing, discretionary, some of the REITs, we're going to talk about REITs in the weekly review this week, some of these things are looking okay and interesting. So we've got things to do and places to go. It's just a question of how we actually do it. So. Other questions, or we'll close out the call. And Paul, thank you. We'll talk later on.
Hey, Fred, it's Jeff. I got one last one to finish up with something you just mentioned. Housing. We've been getting some really good housing numbers here in the monthly releases. And take a look at XHB, especially on the weekly, because it looks like it's about breaking out to
it could break out to the upside here. It looks quite good. And, you know, Jeff, I think one of the things we are seeing is something we talked about, which is really important, which is, you know, as rates start to creep up, a lot of people on the sidelines that were trying to capture the absolute low in rates are going to come into this housing market. You may not have gotten the low in rates, but rates are still very attractive, and you're seeing that in Atlanta and some of the other markets that I follow around the country.
Interesting. So that being the case, like if you look at, you know, like Mohawk, MHK, take a look at that. That chart looks great. Clearly that benefits when more houses are being built because that means more carpeting is going in, et cetera.
Yeah.
But then when we go back to like Whirlpool, which was mentioned just a little earlier, Whirlpool has been kind of ugly, but it does look like it's trying to kind of hit a bottom here and maybe start turning up. Would you would you be okay with both of those as plays on housing? Or
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know, Jeff, you're raising an interesting point here, which is in every bull phase, in every market, one of the things we've seen over time, Jeff, you and I have seen it together when we were at Robinson Humphrey throughout our careers. You know, the same stocks that were going up in 1992 and leading the market aren't leading the market now, okay? You will have a change of leadership for the next big bull phase. And to my way of looking at it, that next set of leadership is going to be coming from the stuff that's strong now. You know, if you look at the bull market from 1994 to 1999, the leader, the hot, best performing sector for much of that time was not technology. It was financials, right? Bob Robbins and I did a lot of work on that back in that time period, okay? You're going to see, you could very well see a big leadership change out of the Apples, out of the Netflix, out of all this stuff, into some of the real companies like Bank of America, you know, like BB&T, which looks great, like XHB and some of the housing stocks, you know, some of the consumer stocks, stocks that haven't been leaders. So that's sort of what we're looking for the next upleg.
Okay, good. That's it for me then.
Cool. With
hey,
that,
Fred.
Yes, sir.
Quick, sorry, Jeremy Connor here. How are you doing, buddy?
Fine, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm good. I joined the call late, so again, I apologize, but I know you love the XLF. What do you guys think about the regional banks? And I'm sorry if you've already gone over it, but just
we
like a KRE, just a general.
Yeah,
okay.
I like the regional banks. The only I've been playing the bigger, you know, national banks rather than the regional ones because I think those are underowned, and there's a little bit more bang in something like Citigroup than there may be in SunTrust, but. You know, I like the regional banks. I'd be in almost any financial. But, you know, there's virtually no firm out there, you know, pounding the table saying buy Citigroup and Bank of America. What I want to do is position in those as they start to break out, with the idea being that when they start pounding the table on some of these things that were already there. But if you've got regional banks, I'd hold them. I'd just start looking around for some of the bigger banks and put some money in there, too.
Got it.
You know, KBWR looks pretty good, right? But don't overlook KBWB, which is actually starting to look a little bit like there's more potential there.
Right. Okay. Okay,
sure.
Cool. Thanks.
Good. Any other questions? Very good. Then this will end the Fred Report technical market call for July 23rd. 2015. Everybody have a wonderful week and enjoy your weekend.